Welcome to Making Geeks. We are the podcast for dads, makers, and geeks. Today, we are joined by Mr. Josh Price.
Hello.
Mr. Mark O'Keefe.
What's going on?
Wes Wayne.
Hello. Hi.
And our very special guest, Mr. Bob Claggett.
What's up, guys?
Our first returning guest.
Ooh. It's true.
You're a regular installment now when we want to talk about Star Wars. If there's a Star Wars movie, you got a reserve
awesome.
Seat.
So this week, every December yep. from now on, right?
Yeah, once exactly. a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're kind of committed to this for the next, 4 or 5 years that I've planned out so far?
Yeah, forever. Jeez.
We signed the contract.
Episode 8 next year, and then the Han Solo movie the year after that, and then something else.
Episode 9.
Episode 9. And they're still trying to decide between like a Yoda movie, an Obi-Wan movie.
Boba Fett.
Or something else.
Yeah, Boba Fett.
I'd watch it. I'd watch an Obi-Wan movie.
Jabba the Hutt, the teenage years.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a good one.
He's a lot slimmer then, I think.
They've even...
Well, now they can CGI people. The sky's the limit.
Well, only if they could do it better than what they did in Rogue One.
Agreed.
Oh, come on.
There it is. There's the first hit.
Let's look back a couple years at Tron Legacy and how creepy that was.
It was just as creepy to me.
I think it was significantly better. It was like Tarkin, you could tell, but it wasn't so crazy obvious.
It looked like Rebels with better graphics.
Leia, it was really obvious.
Okay, so let's start.
When they held the camera on him.
In the weeds yeah. already, and it's going to be good.
Yeah.
The voice was good, though.
All right, we'll start.
All right, so Around the Horn, did you like it? Yes or no? And, like, give me your 2-second pitch as to why. So we'll throw it to Wes first, and then you throw it to somebody else.
I did like it. I thought it was a good way to tell sort of a new story that didn't have a huge impact on the rest of the universe, but it kind of added to it without too much problem. And it had some good callbacks, which was fun. And it was just fun. I mean, it's not my favorite, but it's not my least favorite.
You're supposed to throw.
I'll pass it off to Mark.
Okay. I went into it with really high hopes because I'm kind of sick to death of the Skywalker family drama. I want a new story in Star Wars, which is why I kind of attached to Rebels so much. I did like the movie. I do have some issues with it, though. It was potentially my favorite up until the end.
Hmm.
Oh, Bob.
I did like it. I think the main reason that I liked it was that it played within the universe and it connected better than it should have. Like, they could have easily made a movie that just, like, touched on, yes, it's Death Star plans, and it could have been connected in no other way, and still, you know, like, they could have gotten away with that. But I thought they went the extra mile to, like, embed it in the story to where it worked, rather than trying to shoehorn it in. So, Sean.
Well, I didn't not like it.
Huh?
Honestly, I think part of the problem of why I'm not as happy with the film is because of the hype of everybody's reaction. I think set it up for me to expect something more than what it ended up being. And I kind of agree with Bob, where I think that it plays better in the universe than I ever really expected it to. And I really like that it actually gave a really good explanation of why the Death Star had that weakness to begin with. Because that's been made fun of for years. And now having, within canon, an actual explanation of why it was there, I really like that kind of missing piece of the puzzle. A lot of the things surrounding it I have issues with, though, that I'm sure that we'll get into. Josh?
I liked it. I wanted it to be a bridge between the prequels and the original series. Like, I thought this was their chance to kind of, like, make a wedge that would make people want to go back and look at the prequels, or at least Revenge of the Sith. And it kind of did in a couple spots, but like you're saying, like it touched enough in the Star Wars universe to make people nostalgic while being able to tell like an independent story, because you knew what the ending was going to be. So it's how to make people interested and how do you make people like want to watch a movie that you already know the ending of. And I think they did a really good job.
It's kind of why I was like, everyone on the internet's like, if you ruin this movie for me, I'll kill you. I'm like, we kind of know exactly where it's going, don't we?
Well, I think everybody just didn't know the fate of the characters. That was the big unknown. Because, I mean, they could have taken that any direction and still let it would have fit. Like, it would have made sense, you know?
There was a theory that people were predicting before the film came out that I kind of wanted to be true, where the main group that was stealing the planets of the Death Star were the ones that became the Knights of Ren that we first see in Episode 8. There is a YouTube channel called Film Theory that the guy basically went through the entire course of the theory and matched it up with artwork from Episode 7. And I liked it. I kind of thought it would be cool if it did connect that way, but looks like it doesn't. And that's one of the things I was hoping would have happened.
I was pretty impressed that a Disney movie let all of their characters die.
Yeah.
Like, and I read that Gareth Edwards, when he was making the screenplay, that they were like, well, we can't kill everybody. So they wrote like a differing screenplay that there's some twist where they all end up leaving, or they catch a ship that they could have got out in time or whatever, and then they're like, it doesn't make sense. And when they pitched it to Lucasfilm, they're like, well, I mean, sounds like everybody's got to die, and they gave him the green light. And so Disney was okay with, you know, not or making a film that was not sequelable. That makes sense. Like, because the Star Wars saga is like, you can just go, excuse me, like we said, they could go on forever. It's like, well, we're going to make a movie that has a finite ending that you can't, you know, draw out.
That's what I was a little upset about. Not that, because the whole point of it was a win at a very great loss. Now, you had a whole lot of soldiers down there, but you had, I thought those characters were well written. The five main, was it five or six?
Five.
Six.
The droid.
Six guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, like, granted, not everybody should have survived. I think that's a good plot point to have some of the people that you're a little invested in die in some cases, but you couldn't have given me like three people just something.
They did. Tarkin lived.
All the people I don't care about.
C-3PO.
I loved Donnie Yen's character and his buddy. I thought that was really interesting that we finally get two really interesting Force users that were not Jedi. The robot was awesome, and he really needs to stop dying in every sci-fi movie he's in.
For real.
Because it's getting ridiculous.
Was his friend a Force user, though? He seemed like he was... He accepted at the end.
He said in the movie that he was one of the more, not powerful, but one of the, I guess, the more fervent like guardians of the wills. And
well, how do you shoot that many times and get bullseyes every time?
Yeah,
that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
And I knew Forrest Whitaker was dying from the trailer because you don't scream save the rebellion if you're surviving.
See, I took issue with that. Why did he just not get on the ship? There's no reason he could not have gotten on the ship.
No, I think for him it was at the point like he's mostly robot. He's given pretty much all of his body to the fight, and I think that was him just going, "Yeah, you know what? I'm done fighting. Yeah. I'm not fighting that."
That was his acceptance there at the end.
Well, see, that brings up an interesting thing. A friend of mine told me this, and I don't know if he heard it somewhere or if it was a thing that he noticed, but all the major characters that died accepted it right before their death. And I hadn't noticed that the first, I saw it again today and it was interesting watching it with that perspective, but like every one of the characters, they saw their death coming and they looked it in the face. Every one of the major characters. And it only happened when they were like willing to stand still for it and let it hit them, which really changes like why it's important that they all died at the end. If you think about it that way, because it was like more about people processing their own stuff and being okay with this is inevitable, and I'm going to be all right with that. You know, rather than like, oh no, that guy died just because he was in the line of fire or, you know, his ship crashed or whatever.
In a small way, it's...
I'll agree with that for all except the TIE fighter pilot, because he kind of just like looked and went, mother.
I said major characters.
Everyone.
I mean, so like it.
I kind of liked him though. Sorry.
In a small way, Bob's saying is they found peace in that moment.
Yeah,
and that was like when they accepted it.
Well, and even that guy, the pilot, said, you know, Forrest Whitaker, Galen told him like, this is where you can go to make it right. Like, you can start to fix the stuff that you've done wrong by making this. And so,
yeah
even though he died in the moment, but he still kind of corrected his life at the end.
I think my favorite line from the whole movie is when they put the bag over Donnie Yen's head and he's like, really?
Yeah.
Really? The blind guy? Yeah, I think that's why I'm most upset why he died.
The humor was pretty welcome in this film because it's, you know, it's essentially a war movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a commando film.
For such a dark one, yeah.
You know, they're storming the beaches and they've got their chin straps all undone like they're about to hit Normandy. It's a throwback to, it's like a war documentary. And a lot of the aerial battle shots I thought were super awesome with that kind of GoPro view that they have. And this is the first one where you get like a rear-facing GoPro view of an X-Wing with the two engines sticking out the back. I thought was super awesome. And then when you come, I watched it in 3D. I wanted to watch it in 3D once and then 2D the second time, but I didn't get a chance to. But when they come out of Lightspeed right before they hit Edu, like, that visually was an amazing shot. Like, the graphics and the CG in this movie, like, other than the goofy talking heads, like...
Yeah, cool. Dude, the wave of, like, Earth?
Yeah, the...
Like,
the
crashing setscapes, and everything?
Like, the environments so that you're in. Like, even when they, like, this is what planet you're on in some, like, documentary style, you get these, like, International Space Station-type shots of all of the planetscapes. It was visually, like, stunning, the entire movie.
Did you think it was weird that they didn't title Mustafar? They did every other single location but that one.
See, that's where I was going with the tie back to the originals.
But why?
It's like they could have very easily left that entire sequence out. It had really no relevance into the movie at all. Right? And so it showed him.
Just add a little something. But they think that's a lot of the reshoots just added him
apparently
in there.
Apparently, Darth Vader lives on
Isengard
in Mordor.
That's what I read.
It's his German castle.
I read something today that they said it was kind of a critique on the Emperor that he's there. It's not that he wants to be there. It's that the Emperor wants him to live where his greatest failure was. To be reminded of that every day.
I read something about that too. Yeah, to remind him of like the loss and the struggle that he went through, so that he continues to be angry about it and continues to be fueled by that.
There were rumors that the guy who came in to let Vader know while he's in the pool, there are rumors that that's Commander Snoke or Emperor Snoke or whatever. Just some old decrepit looking guy.
I saw a video who explained who it was. It was like a super offshoot character. I never remembered, but I'll link the video. And afterwards, they explained who he is. And he was one of the advisors
to the Emperor.
He's like another side character.
Is he one of the guys dressed in purple?
Yeah.
Somebody raised a point.
No,
he's
the cloaked figure in the middle.
That is really one of the only shots that you see. Other than an Empire, when like the helmet comes down, when you see through the little like the clamshell looking thing he's in, that was the most vulnerable that Darth Vader has ever been in any of the movies. Like, he's got no arms, he's got no legs, he's just got two Imperial guards over next to him, which, I mean, have been defeated very easily before. And so he is like completely vulnerable in that particular moment. And again, this has no relevance on the movie. It's just adding to like the depth of Darth Vader's character. And I was reading that people were upset that they included it, and it's like, well, if you're going to include Darth Vader, like, do all or nothing. And some people are upset he was only in the movie for, like, 4 minutes. But I loved every shot that Darth Vader was in, except for his... I did not like the pun that he threw. I am a fan of wordplay. I did not feel
a lot of people
that
had
Darth
problem
Vader
with that.
or even Anakin. I liked it. Like watching the prequel, Anakin Skywalker is not capable of clever wordplay.
Wait, remind me, what did he say?
Oh, he said, he was choking out. He said, do not choke on your aspirations.
Yeah. Choke on your own ambition.
Like, there should have been one of them Imperial Guards going, hey, oh.
That's right.
Like, in the background.
Or if it, like, zoomed into his mask and you saw him wink behind the lens or something.
Yep.
So,
I'm glad someone else got that.
So there was, like, some complaint from people about how, at the end, all of a sudden, you see this Darth Vader, like, you know, throwing people around and chopping people up and blah, 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 and it's, like, butted right up against the New Hope, where 10 minutes later, theoretically, he's, like, this kind of lumbering dude who walks in and doesn't do anything, and people are like, you know, that doesn't make sense. And one of the things that I heard, and it wasn't official, but talking about how he's, at that point, still, he's weak, and he needs that back-to-tank, and so he had just having kind of refueled in the back-to-tank,
weak.
He had that certain amount of energy, and he basically expended all of his saved-up energy by killing all those people, and that's why through part of A New Hope, he's just kind of slow and, you know, like why he fights so badly with Obi-Wan and stuff like that. Just like, I have a giant stick.
That part I thought was a nice tie back to the originals too. How you have that kind of youthful, like, even though he was just ripping and shredding, like, you see him get animated. You see the Anakin Skywalker kind of shine through, like you said, instead of like the lumbering old guy that can't raise his arms above his shoulders. I know, right? That's what it had, that kind of image.
Like slashing younglings all over again.
I don't think that scene was brutal enough. Yeah. Nope. I don't think it was brutal enough.
Hmm.
I don't know. Tossing people up against the ceiling and chopping them in half. I think that's...
I wanted him to walk in and basically just go like that and pin everybody to the wall and walk through.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, no, just like, I am so far above you that I don't need to kill you.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, he should be able to do stuff like that, right? I mean,
we hear about this mythic power of Darth Vader, and still, we have an opportunity to show it a little bit more. They did, but I still think they kind of held back.
I think when you see the guy who's trying to shove the disc through the crack in the door, don't worry so much about everybody else in the room. Like, you kind of got to focus on that guy.
Throw your lightsaber through everybody else and hit that guy, you know?
Well, part of the problem is that I don't think there's any other movie where we're going to have an opportunity to see this.
Yeah.
This might have been our last opportunity to see Vader in any movie.
Well, I mean, there's still... I've heard talks of an actual Vader movie.
I suppose.
He's already had... How many movies? He's already had a whole system of movies. He's had his turn.
Well, there's a lot of there's a lot of comic stuff, and there's still tons they could do, because at this point, linear time isn't really an issue. You know, they've been jumping back and forth in the comics, and now they're doing it in the movies, and there's plenty you could do, and that's kind of what I want someone to do. I want someone to tell a Star Wars story that has nothing to do with what we've seen already. You know, I want a new offshoot. I was hoping for that TV show or the video game that was going to be part canon, or just something that is a world that we haven't seen before. Which is why I was really upset that Shadows of the Empire went non-canon, because that book opened up an entire new world of, you know, there's actually a mob in Star Wars that's not the Hutts. That's, you know, there's these people that are playing the Hutts in the Empire and grand machinations across the board for everybody, and it was fascinating the way that book was written, and now that's gone.
Actually, it's not. Black Sun is still canon because of the new novels. It's in the new novels. Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
It as like a passing name, but it is, you know, there. So I'm reading Catalyst right now, which is it's the book before Rogue One. Oh, there it is. And so it's about Galen and him and Krennic, basically. It's about their relationship and how Krennic was always trying to pull him into, you know, being a part of the Empire, and he didn't want to. He wanted to do like energy research and all this stuff. So it's pretty interesting, and I haven't finished the book. I was hoping to finish it before the movie, but I didn't get there. But it does set up their relationship a lot better, and the investment of like him and Lyra and, you know, why they didn't want to be a part of it so much and why she was so willing to fight back against Krennic and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Do you think there's any hidden meaning behind Jin having the little stormtrooper plush doll? Or you think it was just for hating the Empire as much as he did? Or was that like something they put in there just so it would like help convince the Empire that they're on their side? They wouldn't put it in there unless there was some reason, right?
You know, where they're laughing it up because they're all part of the Empire and it's great to be part of the Empire. Like, as a little kid, she's irrelevant to all this conflict that her dad is having. So, she's on the winning team at that point. So, if she has a doll, it's not going to be, you know, Chewie. It's not going to be a Jedi. It's going to be the Stormtrooper. It's going to be the little soldier, right? That's their G.I. Joes. And I don't know if they have a Barbie-type figure for the little girl in a galaxy far, far away, but, I mean, that's... Well, whenever you're in that...
Maybe they also help reinforce her thought that he was bad.
I mean, during that part where they had to...
She didn't realize there was a duality to it, you know?
Because when they were in it...
Because, you know...
You're not a bad guy. Her dad's her dad. Her dad goes to work, and he's part of this team. So, I mean, her having that Stormtrooper doll whenever they were on Coruscant, I assume that's where they were. It looked like where they were. But whenever they go to the Iceland planet, like, I don't know, it might be something that she just kind of held on to. But they were prepping hard. So whenever that ship showed up, she knew exactly what to do. So they had to prepare. So there had to have been a conversation. They're like, okay, these are bad people. And maybe, I don't know. But I thought about that. I thought about that doll. I'm like, how does that play?
I thought about it. And honestly, I think the reason they put it in there was for contrast. Because you have this black ground, this like neon green grass, these black troopers with like a gray sky. And having that stark white thing as a... Just to break up the visual stuff. That's what I thought it was. But.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, the X-Wing pilot.
You know, Rey, she actually had, like, a plush pilot.
I did notice it the first act.
So maybe there was, like, a tie-in sort of like that, like an inverse sort of thing. I don't know.
And when you watch it in 3D, like, the 3D glasses had, like, a tint. And so that's when Grand Moff Tarkin showed up. I'm like, what does he look weird? And I kept having to, like, put my glasses up and down. So I was like, is this some weird 3D thing that I'm looking at? I'm like, this, because I didn't really listen to any of the things beforehand. I was like, no, that guy's dead. I was like, that can't be. I was like, he has a computer head.
Do you guys get the feeling that there was something planned for this movie that got cut or that they took out afterwards? Yeah. Because
if you watch any of the trailers.
And that's what I'm thinking about, because there was all this subtext of Jin's character.
The trailer showed a lot of stuff.
That, you know, in one of the Imperial outfits. And nothing happened with that. And I don't know if that was just me misleading the audience, if that was something that was changed with the reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to see that movie.
Yeah.
And then we got this one.
Yeah, I wanted to see her fight a TIE fighter.
I wanted to see that scene. I was prepared for that scene.
She walked towards the TIE fighter on the catwalk and... She ran on the beach with the data, the hard drive. She was running away from the AT-ATs
where they lived
on the beach, on the sand. Yeah,
I
think so.
Well, the thing that I read was that the idea was for them to all die, but how it played out changed dramatically. Mm. So, originally they were supposed to be able to get off the tower, get down and deliver the tape instead of beaming it. They were going to deliver the tape, and then everybody was going to die. But apparently, you know, they just reshot all the different things to make the whole mechanism different with the same effect. So, but yeah, I was bummed not to see that stuff as well, because there's some beautiful shots. Like that shot of her in the hallway with all the lights coming up around her in the costume, which she was in. I mean, that's
a hero shot.
Yeah, exactly. And
where she says, we rebel. You know, that was like pretty...
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay that they cut that, though. That's a little hokey.
The biggest thing that threw me off from the trailers to the music to the movie was the music. Like, I'm a music person, and so the music in that trailer, that first trailer, as soon as I heard it, I was like, what? Oh, yeah. That is awesome.
You got like,
the siren?
Well, no, not like the they took the Star Wars theme and then they changed the final chord of it, so it had like it was like a variation on a theme, and I was like, oh wow, this is where they're taking Star Wars music now. That's awesome. And then it did not exist in the movie. And for
That's true. I forgot about
the music in the movie felt like knockoff Star Wars music. It was like somebody made Space Wars the movie, and then they, you know, it was awful.
I just saw the movie.
GoBots.
I just saw the movie a couple hours ago, and I don't remember any of the music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
it's
the point.
It's that, like, forgettable.
Yeah.
That was Michael Giacchino that did the music, and he did the music in some of the first, or the newer versions of Call of Duty. And from what I heard is he replaced the original composer, and they had to do all the music for this in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And so it felt rushed. And I remember the opening scene, like once the music started playing when the Rogue One credit finally came up, and I didn't know that John Williams wasn't going to do the music. But that was the first thing that came to my mind. I'm like, this is not John Williams. Like, I don't know who, like, not Danny Elfman-esque, but I was like, this is not John Williams here.
I mean,
this is
he did all the new Star Trek movies and everything, too. I mean, he's J.J. Abrams' music guy, so.
I don't remember those being bad, but yeah, this one just didn't have, like, a theme.
No, those were good. Like, he usually does really good work.
I guess maybe the time crunch was it.
Did it feel like they were trying to avoid it being, like, a inline Star Wars movie?
See, that's where I think that was a marketing gimmick. I think it was.
There was no crawler. The music was different. And those are really the two main things. Like, you see a Star Wars movie, it's the music, the crawler, and then you're in Star Wars.
I think it goes one step beyond that.
You know?
When Rogue One came on screen, I was thinking, that looks like a logo that I did in Photoshop. There was nothing special about it. And I thought that they were going to tag all these movies, because originally they were going to call these Star Wars anthology movies, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And they said, no, they're Star Wars story. But there was, you know, nothing extra with the title. There was, I don't know, it was really uneventful.
Yeah, it didn't say Star Wars on screen anywhere in the entire movie.
No.
I thought that was weird. Because, I mean,
because it is still Star Wars.
I get that you want to, like, break it off and say this is a separate thing than the main storyline that, you know, we're following for 40 years in a row.
I feel it.
But still, it's, like, the same universe. There's a lot of the same characters. It's the same dynamic and the same thing that people are fighting against. I mean, it's the same.
At least he's the logo that's on the poster.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I think the whole standalone thing was, like, a marketing gimmick, personally. I think it could have been. I mean, it's a prequel. You call it, and I think they were trying to avoid that word because it has like a negative taint to it in this universe. Yes, I mean, it's, I don't know. I think I consider it a prequel. I think that was kind of marketing BS personally, but
oh, it is. It absolutely is marketing BS. But you're right. They are like when you say Star Wars prequel, you immediately get that bad taste in your mouth, and you go Jar Jar.
Right.
You know,
there's another spinoff they can do. I mean. You could have a whole trilogy. Of
there you go. Where did he go?
The death of Jar Jar?
It could be like Perfect Strangers with Jar Jar and Palpatine or something.
He could still be alive. What's the lifespan on those guys?
Balki Bartolomos, Jar Jar Binks.
I still love the theory that Jar Jar was the ultimate Sith Lord.
That's a pretty good one.
He caused this whole thing.
Yep.
Misa gonna all ruin Jar-Jar's the universe.
I like that one bit of Robot Chicken where they're like, oh, yeah, you did everything. I'm so, and then they see him throw on the black hood and start laughing easily.
So what about the characters? Because I'll put out that I did not like half of the main cast.
Well, you didn't like the cast or the characters?
Both.
Really?
I thought that, Cassian... Like the captain, the co-star of the movie.
Diego
I did not
Luna.
Like his character.
Yeah. He could like have died, and I would have been okay with it.
Like it was the biggest conflict. Like right out the gate, this is Captain Cassian. He's a captain in the rebellion, right? Which already has connotations with it. You've reached this status. You're the good guys. You're the rebels. So the first thing you see him do is he can shoot an informant in the back and kill this guy in cold blood. And when I watched it originally. I was like, what is this guy doing? And then when I watched it a second time, like, you kind of see some facial expressions, like, they're minor, that may hint at some conflict, but not enough to let you believe that he's conflicted, like you kind of find out later in the movie. But then he's in the town, they're in Jedha City, he shoots a stormtrooper, you're a rebel. That's what you're supposed to do. And then there's another rebel, and he shoots that guy too. I'm like, what are you doing? You're such a wrong character, and I don't think Diego Luna was the person to play this conflicted, like, I'm in the rebellion, but I'm the guy that they make do their dirty work. And so I have to, like, be the scourge of the rebellion to get stuff done. Hmm. And I don't think he pulled it off.
See, I would completely disagree with that. He was actually one of my favorite performances because I thought he did a good job of like, being bad for the sake of the greater good. Like, that's the way I looked at it anyway. It was like, he just became the machine that he needed to be to help the rebellion along for apparently since he was 6 years old, you know. It's like been in it for a long time.
Well, that redemption part that he had, like whenever the council said no, and he's like, I've done terrible things. We've all, like, my band of people, which I wish kind of would have shown up earlier instead of just this polished looking guy, is the scourge, where he actually has a band of people that look like they're the people that should be kind of portraying this character, I felt. Mm. Not this very polished, handsome, swoopty haired fella. And they're like, you know, we've done terrible things. If we give up now, then what's it all for? And I was like, all right, there's your redemption moment. But I felt the stuff leading up to his redemption moment was so, like, up and down. Like, I could not figure him out as a character. And I was supposed to be rooting for him. But I'm like, no, this guy, he's like, he's killing good guys in cold blood. I'm like, I can't root for this
guy. But he was, like, an intelligence officer, right? So he's, like, the cagey type that, you know, you're not supposed to know much about.
And right? That, the second time I tried to go into it with that mindset, but, and again, it's just, I didn't buy Diego Luna, but without that redemption part, which I think he nailed, by the way. I mean, give credit where it's due. I would have just blown off the rest of the cast. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was limber.
All we've ever done was read about them up until,
you know, it was nice to have a good droid that could actually fight. That was nice.
See, I liked the duo. The two guys from the Jedi Temple. Mm-hmm. They were my favorite because they were, I feel there's a huge story that you could tell with them, but they were also kind of like pseudo comic relief for the movie. Like, okay, yeah, we're in this situation, let's have fun with it, you know.
I don't really understand why they went along, though. I noticed that today when I was watching it. Okay, they accidentally got into the little skirmish in Jedha, and they were, like, you know, fighting at the same time as other people. But after that, like, why, you know, why did they go?
Well, I think it was they joined because the Empire was taking all the crystals, and they were supposed to be guarding the crystals. They were the ones that were supposed to be preventing that from happening, and it happened anyway under them.
We could explain it, but I think as far as, like, the movie goes, it should have been a little bit clearer as to their motivation.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they did get captured at the same time, and then that just threw them all into the same bucket. And then they were, like, running away from the planet exploding, so I guess that makes sense. But still, it was just like, hey, guys, you're with us now. And they were like, okay. You know, I don't know. Seemed a little strange. But I did like them. I mean, I liked...
Yeah, there's that.
I liked seeing martial arts in a Star Wars movie. That was cool.
Yes.
That must have been a really powerful stick.
I love watching Donnie Yen.
Word. There are a lot of times in there where I'm like, I have given up on Stormtrooper blast armor. Like, if you got picked up and someone, like, oh, I got bumped by someone's butt and now I'm unconscious, like, that armor is is anti-protection at that point. It's a liability.
I think this is the first, like, if you look at shots fired per people hit, this is the highest percentage of Stormtrooper shots. Like, these are the most accurate Stormtroopers we've ever seen in any movie.
And speaking of Stormtroopers,
they all died on Scarif.
I'm very unimpressed by the new types of troopers they've introduced, like these so-called Death Troopers.
The Death Troopers. Yeah, what do they do?
That's my complaint.
They talk in different
languages. I wanted to see them come out like SEAL Team 6.
Yeah.
Like there's something special about them, and their guns sounded a little bit different. That's the only difference I noticed.
I think they were terrible aliens. Radios.
Yeah. Well, so something I noticed today, and this is like totally stupid, but I noticed every time that they talked, you could hear them, like, you know, doing their, and it was just like, you know, but they're back and forth. And then all of a sudden,
that was an
when when they're on Edu and everything blows up and they're like, Krennic, yep. get, and just, it's just this dude going, yep. Krennic, you need to get to the ship.
Like fries with that.
And it was a death trooper, and I'm like, what, did yep. your helmet stop working or something? Like, why do you sound good all of a sudden?
They got Casey Kasem in a death trooper outfit?
Okay, and then...
See, but I think that goes back
to... Do you guys see the short troopers wearing the green pajama shorts?
All right, I gotta take my headphones off.
What about the other trooper?
See, the helmet's cool, but if you make the rest of the outfit...
You gotta put it on. We were talking about
that. I did not understand the purpose of that. It was so weird.
So I...
It just seems so random.
I've been looking through it, you know, because I've been interested in building the costume and stuff. And, I've seen two different official things about it, which is really weird. One is that they're supposed to be an elite, you know, like the commanders or whatever on the ground. And if that's the case, then boy, were they wasted, because they did nothing at all. Nope. And then the other thing that I read said that they were nothing special at all. They just happened to be stormtroopers. They got different costumes. Like, literally, like, they're just like you're, hey, we put a new helmet in your locker, so you get to wear that one today, you know.
The stormtrooper even doing cosplay.
Being an ex-soldier, like, we change uniforms so much. So that's the old stuff, and they're waiting to get issued the new stuff.
Hmm.
That's all. They're phasing out the old stuff and waiting to get their fresh whites.
See, the one thing I did really like about this movie, though, was that, I mean, we knew the Empire was brutal, but up until this point, it was just kind of like, okay, yeah, they do bad guy things. This was the first one where they're like, they did something like, okay, our base has been compromised. Everyone's got to die.
Yeah.
Our people, yeah. Their people, this whole place goes away. And I'm okay with that.
Except for those two lucky bar patrons that show up again.
Yeah, how'd they get out so quickly?
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
You better watch yourself.
They had a taxi. Oh. They had an Uber just in the nick of time. Yeah.
Did anybody notice that the Death Star was upside down when they shot?
I did.
Jedi City.
But it's not upside down because it's space.
And
there is no upside down.
I was like, okay, I get that the Death Star has an anti-gravity machine. Gravity does not exist in the Star Wars universe. I understand that. I'm like, but right side up and upside down, absolutely do.
Well, it creates its own gravity.
Yeah, but still, your chair faces so a single large. Direction. It's not like, what's all right, everybody brace for upside down mode, and then like. Everybody's tables flip upside down and magnetize to the ceiling.
Well, what about this?
For the whole time, I'm like, why is Death Star upside
what
down?
What if it was underneath the planet and the camera was upside down?
Ooh. Touche.
So
Mr.
maybe
Craggett.
It's just a directorial decision. Like, yeah, okay, we need an upside down camera shot here.
We've done everything
that
else.
Scene,
GoPros
that
on the
scene
X-wing.
On the planet where you see the Death Star coming up, though, that was yeah. cool.
Oh, after it warped in there, I would love to see one go to light speed.
I wanted to see it go to light speed too.
I want to see the engines on it. Where are the engines on it?
My favorite scene was when the AT-AT, like when the smoke like just cleared and then covered it back
AT-ACT.
Up.
AT-ACT.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was very ominous.
Pardon, sir. But when it was in like the peripheral. And the head just stuck out, and then the fog cleared just enough where you could see the head, then it covered it back mm-hmm. up. Like, that shot gave me goosebumps. And that's when I was watching it with Deacon. He was like, there's an AT-AT! And he, like, stands up in the theater and starts yelling. I was like, yeah, buddy. But that shot was one of the most beautiful shots in the whole movie.
See, that shot I kind of expect him to do in a Jurassic Park movie, you know? Like, the big monsters right there and then disappears. Oh, no.
So do we want to discuss how easily they got wiped out by X-Wings?
Yes. What's up with the blaster? Man, they went down by blaster.
I have a couple
so
theories.
Easily.
What? Because those AT-ATs were different, though, because they had that brown thing in the middle. And you remember the one scene where the one didn't have it at all, so the X-Wing just kind of threw two shots into the frame and blew it in
half.
Yeah,
that was pretty awesome. It just, like, fell apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really cool.
They weren't fully armored.
But I think they were a different model AT-AT than the ones that Hoth had. I think Hoth was...
Cargo.
They're AT-ACTs.
You're sticking to that point.
That's canon. Yeah. No, I mean, that's a legit point. Yeah, that's why it has that part. And I agree, they traded armor for cargo capabilities. Like, if they had the same engines, it's just like an aircraft, you know? You gotta, if you want more armament, you gotta drop some armor, you know what I'm saying? And vice versa. So that's my counter to that argument. No.
This is the art of and the ultimate visual. And I will say that the visual one is amazing if you're going to like look to do props or costumes or anything, because it has super beautiful close-up pictures of every costume and every weapon.
I love those books, man.
But I was going to look up the ACT while we were talking about it.
See, I was watching this because this is like a commando kind of movie. Like, I was looking at all these things from like a soldier's perspective, because it's pretty much what this was. It was a raid. And to that point, for the ATA, whatever, the C, the cargo version, by the time they got to Hoth, they would have went through revisions. Like, you would have learned from this. Like, all right, we have a vulnerability in this defense. We have to up armor these particular points. So, yeah, that they were shot by blasters. The little monkey door gunner, which I thought was awesome. Like, that was my job when I was in the Army. I shot stuff from helicopters, and we used to call each other the drunk monkeys. So it was more than appropriate for the little monkey guy, who was actually the guy from Willow, shooting at the knees and brought it
was
down.
Was that Warwick Davis?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah?
He was in a Stranger Abroad. But anyway, so as a tactician and as like a weapons manufacturer, you would have learned from that, and you would have up armored those things.
Hmm.
And so the head is where all the people are, and where all the guts and like the drive mechanism, all the computers. You're going to armor that thing, so when it gets shot by, you know, the missile, you know, it kind of jolts and then it comes back to center. Like, that's the part you're going to defend.
That was a great scene.
Yeah.
There was the other thing, like the crystals. Are they volatile by nature? Like, presumably they were carrying a bunch of them, so maybe they're more explosive.
Based on like the book that I'm reading right now, they're supposed to be the source for these huge amounts of energy. Like, if you use them in the correct way, you could power an entire planet with, which is why they're used as the power source for the Death Star. So, yeah, I guess that's a good point.
Right. I was hoping she would use her necklace in some fashion, because usually in movies when they introduce like a little thing, it like comes at, like in the third act at the last moment, they use that thing that was like revealed at the beginning to do something.
And like in Man of Steel, where
Man
of Steel to save the planet, she has to take this perfectly fitting kyber crystal little hole. Oh, she saved the day with her.
It would have been awesome if like she couldn't get the dish to reorient itself at the end, and she was like, "Oh, I'll just jam my crystal under it, and that'll stand it upright." It would have been great. I'm just noticing here, looking at this page in this book, that there's a Shore Trooper helmet right there. That's the driver for that AT-ACT, and it's white.
I did see
that's
that.
Cool.
Yep.
So I can repaint mine white.
I also noted like the lack of, I don't know, business type accommodations. So they go and what was the plan? Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Leave it to Josh to have this conversation.
Yes. They. What was the planet?
Yes. The project managers.
I'm gonna note this, because Krennic was the project manager, and there was a huge lapse in basic project management things. They're like, what was the name of the planet where it's all raining and they're doing the thing? I had it written down. I don't remember.
But, for the clones?
Huh? Was it on Edu? Okay, so they're on Edu, and it goes, and they have a meeting, like, and a presentation in the pouring rain.
Yeah, I noticed that, too.
I'm like, you've got these people coming out, they're like, oh, boss man's showing up, like, oh, we gotta get my fancy clothes on, and let's go meet the boss. Like, take 10 steps in the door, and you're not in the pouring rain. All right, there's
conference room somewhere. If you're going there to murder people, you want to kill them in the rain so it washes the blood away.
No.
No, they're lasers,
you
man.
Know that
it
there's
cauterizes
rebels
the
showing up.
They're lasers. There's no blood.
Yeah. There's got to be a conference room somewhere that they could have done that whole thing in. Would have been way more professional. They would have been sitting in a chair. They would have not known it was coming. That was another thing. Like, their data storage? Come on. You need a giant freaking satellite dish for data storage? Like, and you need to have a little arm that picks up your... Man, you could have emailed that crap.
You know, Invader could have Skyped in with a little hologram too, right? So,
and then with the satellite dish... Some poor IT guy was like, why do we need a little, like, a disk drive at the top of this huge
precipice? This was thousands of years ago or whatever.
And they're like, I want one there anyway. Put me a drop right there. Like, this is so impractical. And they're like, do it anyway, Steve.
All right. I'll defend Steve. Josh on this one. I was looking at that like, okay, in order to reorient this dish, somebody decided to put this platform way the hell out.
This reminds me of the discussion on
God
Clerks when they talk about the roofers.
With nothing but a simple arm rail to move. From
the receptionist desk on the first floor.
That's so you can see the satellite dish.
And is she some expert? Has she got a little satellite thing? And she just like, beep, boop, beep, and like moves a little joystick. And is like, oh, good job. You fixed the whole entire gigantic satellite dish with no experience.
You get a raise, Kathy.
and Bodie.
No, it said that it was armored for protection of the cargo that it was carrying. But they do move faster than the AT-ATs. That's all it said.
Did it say anything about the armor in there, Bob? You consulted your manual?
I was actually off topic, not slightly off topic. I was reading an article about that that plane that they spent like $4.5 billion on. And somebody compared that to, okay, how much would it cost to build an AT-AT? And they figured out real world hardware and lasers and missiles and stuff. So they figured out to make an AT-AT, it would cost like something like $4.5 million.
That's not
much. Yeah.
Not much at all.
It was like, I was surprised. Cheap it was. Yeah.
That thing
was
fun.
I'm like, why don't, for one of those planes, we could have had 25 AT-ATs. Why don't we have AT-ATs?
Colin Furs made one. Just put some servos and some hydraulic piston.
That was awesome. I'll give him a lot of credit on that. That thing is cool. That is the best treehouse ever.
All right, so back to characters. What do you think about Bodie, the pilot?
Didn't like him.
I think he was completely underdeveloped. I think, like, I liked the actor. I think he did a good job, but there was like, hey, here's this guy.
For him having it, okay. Well, this is sort of offshoot. The CG character at the beginning that read his mind, I hated completely.
Yeah.
It was completely terrible. It reminded me of the same character that was in Han's ship from Force Awakens. Like, they just had to have a CG character in there that would look complete.
One with tentacles.
Yeah, exactly. Tentacle porn in Star Wars.
It was all groping on.
It was terrible.
Dirty.
But he was supposed to be, like, lost his mind, but, like, he magically has his mental capacity back. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just my hearing, but I needed subtitles watching the film. I couldn't get a clear beat on anybody's name while I was watching.
Oh, yeah, that was bad. I had to look up people's names. I wrote it phonetically, and I took notes.
But they mentioned him like 17 times.
But I think that actually might have been intentional. So the only names that you came away knowing were Jen and Cassian, right? Because they were like the two main. But all the characters were disposable, really. And so, I mean, I don't think that the names of the other characters were even, like, important, and I think they showed that by not making it really obvious. You know, somebody walks into a room and goes, hi, I'm Bodie, or, I'm, you know, it was nothing like that. They were just part of the background, part of the situation. But so I still don't know what their names are.
That led to me, like, not really caring about their story arc.
Yeah.
Like, they were so disposable, and they were, like, we talked about, like, oh, those guys were on the ship just because they got captured together, just so accidental. They played key roles, but those key roles could have been played by anybody. Like, you move the master switch. I mean, in theory, you throw enough of those rebels in there, somebody would have... You just throw a beer bottle at it, you could have hit that switch.
Well, you know what? Maybe Bob was right then. I mean, maybe that was part of the point, that these characters shouldn't be memorable beyond this film because that's it. Their story's done.
But if they're supposed to, you know, sacrifice themselves, you want the audience to have some sort of connection to, like, remorse for them, or show remorse for them when they're gone, you know?
Is that like Matt Damon in Ocean's 11, where it's like you have to be the most engaging person and the most forgettable person all at the same time? Like, in just 1 hour block of time?
See, I mean...
Like, that guy was so great. I'm like, what was his name? Like, I have no idea.
I don't even remember what he looked like. Yeah, I don't know. These characters, I just feel like they... were intentionally vague and intentionally... They're not obviously not remembered by anybody else in the universe after that point, right? I mean, because they're never brought up.
Nobody would have known who they were anyways.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, nobody knew their names. Except, I mean, they were on the Rebel base for an hour or something during that big discussion. But they wouldn't have gotten to know anybody, you know? So I think they were intentionally forgettable.
You think they would have had to, like, sign a logbook or something? Like,
a sign-in
roster?
Like
a visitor badge? Yeah. It's a military establishment. They got to get some sort of clearance.
Their facility security manager is fired. he was Red 5. Red 5 was in charge of that, and he got blown up.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, that I thought was a nice addition to the movie, where you had all the original fighter pilots from Star Wars on this mission and you found out why there was a vacancy in Red 5.
But, and did you hear how they got all that footage that was never used?
Yeah, they just took...
I saw the article. I didn't read it.
Yeah. They were at Lucas, and he's like, hey, what's... Basically, hey, what's this stuff? And they got some old Star Wars footage, like,
we never
basically
digitized.
And he goes through it. Yeah, yeah, and they just go through it. Your Gareth goes through it and finds some shots that were never used. That's kind of crazy. Cool.
Where's Wedge?
Porkins.
Well, if you notice, Red 5 was a big, like, Da Bears-type fat guy, too, which led me to believe that there is some planet that is just, like, infested with big, overweight pilots. They're like, it's my turn to go to the Academy.
Red 5 was Porkin's nephew or something.
I really hope the planet is called Da Bears, because that would be amazing.
Da Bears. We have to go to Da Bears and go get more B-roll mediocre pilots. I go, there's too many of them. That's all you need to learn.
It's actually interesting that Wedge wasn't in there, because he's a big part of the books, the new canon books, that happened before this.
As soon as you started showing faces of people, I was like, all right, where's Wedge? Because Wedge, I don't know, Wedge is, you can talk about Poe being a great pilot. Wedge is what's up. Wedge went through every battle.
Like, and lived.
Integral.
He was one of those Boba Fett characters that was, you know, minimal screen time, but just exploded. Like, he's probably one of the most famous Star Wars characters outside of the main crew.
Yeah.
But unlike Boba Fett, he actually did something.
In the movies, yeah.
Except Boba Fett was a slips, trips, and falls hazard. Like, they made a poster and made a new rule, for guardrails because of Boba Fett.
You had three
Wedge
lines
blew
in the
stuff
movie
up,
and
save
one of
the
them
day
was, ah!
Which I think kind of went back to the Death Troopers. Like, every Star Wars movie has this thing that's like, oh, these guys are going to be so awesome. And just like Captain Phasma, like, there's all this hype about these characters and their armor and all this stuff that you want to make, and then they have, like, zero impact on the plot other than just looking neat.
Yeah.
So I think from now on, there has to be that throwaway, disposable, like, just moneymaker in every Star Wars movie.
Well, okay, go into 7 for a second. Was it me, or did Phasma seem like she just had too much stuff on and could barely move?
So have you heard the theory about her armor? The theory made from, because it's, the reason it's silver is because it's made from the panels off of one of those Naboo silver ships. That there's some, like, history there where she, like, took down one of those ships or something like that and melted down the metal and made her own armor, and that's why she's the only one that has that type of thing. So, it's very possible
that's
it is, like, crazy heavy and, you know, I don't know.
Well, that lack of personal standards on the Empire would lead me back to my point with Bodhi, is that they're like, they captured an Imperial pilot, and then he shows up. I'm like, that's not an Imperial pilot. Like, that guy has long black hair and a beard. That is not the chiseled, well manicured standard that the, you know, the Empire demands of their people. And he's like bumbling over himself. I was like this guy does not fit what they're trying to portray him as.
I did notice that,
and I didn't.
Sorry, go ahead.
I didn't believe him from the very beginning.
He was a contract pilot.
Yeah, I think he was contract, because when they landed on Scarif and the inspection crew came out, I noticed this both times. They came onto the ship, whereas he should have saluted them and said, you know, whatever he should say. He just said, hey, to them. And I was like, what? That's like, the Imperials don't work like that as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, he must have been like a contract pilot. Or the pilots for cargo are just like a different class of, I don't know.
Like truckers,
yeah, space truckers.
Yeah, I mean, because that makes sense.
He wasn't a military pilot.
Like, if you're just hauling cargo, you don't need to be a good pilot. You just need to go from point A to point B and not crash.
Yeah,
and the same with Cassian. Whenever they're on, they're on the planet and they get into, like, the inspecting team's wardrobe,
right,
where Jen looks like a space ninja. Which I finally figured out the second time what she actually was, because it was tripping me up. And she was the landing signaling officer, which is the wasted job whenever they're like, let's put it in landing mode.
Oh, is that what those things on her back were?
Yeah. Yeah. They were the little landing signal things. And being a helicopter crewman, I know that job is, like, the most wasted job in the entire world. And so to see that there's a character who has a wasted job, and then that's who she takes on, I was like, you could have been anybody, and you take on, like, the dumbest. And she looks like a space ninja, and I couldn't figure it out until the second time I watched it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's who she's pretending to be. But
see, at one point I was kind of hoping she would, like, those were the batons she had in the beginning of the movie, and she was going to whoop them out and start whooping on people again, because that, I think she looked awesome in that costume.
But when Cassian puts on the Imperial officer's uniform, and he walks around, everybody's like, hey, what's up? Like, you don't notice that that guy does not look anything like an Imperial officer?
He's like, say what we will about the cargo pilot.
Well, see, like, the biggest giveaway is he's not British.
He has facial hair. There's one Imperial officer that had facial hair, and he got choked out for making bad decisions. And it was just a mustache. Like, and so people are looking around at this guy, and they're like, oh, that must be the same dude that we know, because our garrison is so huge that we just forget the super sweaty, greasy guy with the facial hair, and, like, that would trigger you.
Ships were landing, like, coming and going, like, garbage. You know? And, I mean, it's possible that, like, the standard is not really a standard, but more of the norm. You know, like, it might not have been against protocol for them to have facial hair and stuff, but maybe they just all wanted to be cool and look like everybody else. Bunch of losers. I don't know.
Wes, you guys could have beards and stuff in the Navy, right?
Beards, no.
That's what I heard when you guys were underweight. Mm-hmm. You guys, some Navy guys could have beards. I know, we could only
Only if you had a no-shave chit, which was very, not very widely distributed. Because it would break the seal on the gas masks, so we weren't allowed to have them. Even mustaches were frowned upon having, because you couldn't get a good seal.
Extend past the outer edges of your lips. It was not allowed to go past there.
Hmm. Yeah.
Your sideburns had to be no lower than the lowest opening of your ear. So, like, that was the stuff that, like I said, because of my background, I picked up on. I'm like, an Imperial officer, a military officer would notice.
Yeah.
Like, that guy looks like garbage. That guy must not be one of us, because he obviously does not fit the minimum standards that the Empire has set for its crew and its soldiers, sailors, whoever. And so he's just walking around like nothing. Everyone's like, oh, what's up? Where do you want to go? The main database? Sure, why not? There's only one dude guarding it.
Well, theoretically, nobody should have been able to get to that point. That was dangerous, right? So they shouldn't have been able to get through the giant shield hole in the above the planet, and then they shouldn't have been able to land, and they shouldn't have been able to get from the landing pad to the super tower, and then they shouldn't have been able to get past that receptionist that you were talking about earlier. You know.
That scene was amazing.
I really wanted that to be a practical effect so that we could see some behind the scenes footage of these two scaled miniatures just like smashing into each other.
And the hammerhead vehicle shouldn't have been able to decapitate, even though it was awesome.
The one was amazing. Scene where they have the Star Destroyer and the light coming over it. Was that a practical effect, or was that CG? Because that really looked like a model to me.
I think it might have...
That looked like the original
movie. Actually can't stand that shot. I think it's a terrible shot.
It's too blown out for me. Yeah.
Really? First of all...
It's overexposed?
Yeah. The shot also wasn't needed. It was this weird exposition where they show the shadow moving over the Star Destroyer and the camera kind of pans to the left. And then do you see the shot that's the better shot, which is the like the big dish on the Death Star kind of like going in. Mm-hmm. And that should have been the exposition shot. I don't know why they added that one in. And there are all sorts of shots like that throughout the entire movie. And I'm wondering if those were the ones added in. Even the initial scene that kind of introduces Cassian on that weird planet where he's like in the alleyways where he shoots that informant. Mm-hmm. That whole scene wasn't needed. The exposition of Cassian wasn't needed at all.
Where the two planets are linked together or whatever?
Yeah, whatever that was. I thought it was a waste. I think the introduction of him on Yavin 4 was just fine. I don't think the other thing was needed.
Well,
it jumped around way too much in the beginning.
Well, but that one set up the fact that he was willing to kill someone on his team for the greater good, which I thought was pretty important.
I don't think
it had
that good of a function.
See, I was like Josh. When I saw him shoot the guy for the first time, I was like, whoa, I didn't expect that. That's, you know.
Yeah,
I think everybody had that when they were like, wait, this is supposed to be the good guy. It kind of felt like
I didn't think about that at all. I'm like, whatever. He's a discount Han Solo.
It kind of felt like that scene from Of Mice and Men at the end, because he looked at the guy, he's like, calm down. Everything's going to be okay. Blam!
Well, you talk about discounting. Does this movie take away from Luke Skywalker's hero moment when he actually blows up the Death Star? Because everybody who knows about the weakness in this movie makes it out to be like, oh, all you got to do is shoot a thing. They downplay the difficulty of what Luke actually did, and then in A New Hope, it was like, nope, Luke is the only one who can do this. He has to use the Force. He can't use his regular sights. This is a one-in-a-million shot that he practiced with his backstory with the Womp Rats. Like, he is the only one that could save us. And then when this came about, they were like, all you got to do is do a disturbance in a thing.
Well,
like, it led me to believe that.
I don't think it takes away at all, actually.
I think he...
I think, you know, just because that weakness is there doesn't mean it's easy to get to.
Yeah,
they made it kind of sound...
No, they made it say that anything that happens in the chamber will cause the reaction. But they didn't say how easy it was to get to that chamber, and then that was the whole thing that, you know, if it's the size of a Womp Rat or whatever, like, it's hard to do that thing. Once it gets in there, it doesn't have to do anything specific. So, I don't think it took away from it.
I think it kind of needed it, too, because, like, like you said, the amount of ridicule for how weak of a plot point that was. Of, oh, you know, you can only shoot these things. And there's that little gif that makes fun of the whole thing. Like, oh, I didn't know about space wizards and exhaust ports and pushing thing out and how it goes in. And there was another article I read how they, like, the Empire, even though they lost the Death Star, they never knew about the weakness, so they built the second Death Star with the same weaknesses, which is why it went down so easily the second time, too. Well, easily. So I think, like, that was a much well-needed explanation to make sense of something that was kind of so easily made fun of for... 40 years.
So is there going to be another movie about the people who died getting the plans for the Death Star 2? Because Mon Mothma,
well,
they set
question.
Him up in the exact same way. Like, many, whatever she said, had died Bothans. Getting us this information.
Yes,
and she had her little
Bothans. Where the hell were the
Bothans? That's Jedi.
Who
that's
were
Jedi,
the Bothans?
Though. People always say that. Everybody's been saying that. Like, this Rogue One should be about Bothans. Nope. She said that in Jedi. That's Death Star 2.
Yep.
I'm a super nerd, man.
I thought that was the first one.
Yeah, well, we just watched it. And yeah, many Bothans died. And then she seemed more sad about the Bothans and mentioning them specifically, where in the original, she just, we got the plans.
Yeah.
Here they are. We found them. Now back.
We don't know how we got them.
Somebody emailed it. The secretary emailed it to us. It was really easy.
I wonder if she's like attached to, like maybe she's a Bothan or something. I don't know.
Nah.
Well, I saw in one of the old comic books, the Bothans were like kind of like furry.
Oh, really? She's probably not one of those.
I don't know if that's at all canon or not, but they were like
she's a
cat. They kind of had a little bit of skin and, you know, a beard and pointy ears.
Oh yeah, you're right. I'm looking it up on the wiki.
Wikipedia.
I still love that exists.
Yeah, it doesn't. It has like a sketch of them. But yeah.
No, they were in. Hold on, they were in a comic book. I know because I remember seeing them.
It says here that they communicate with a series of growls. So yeah. Anyway.
So, is the claim that this was better than A Force Awakens nonsense, or do you agree to some extent, Mark?
Wait, better than.
The Force Awakens. Those gears are turning. Yes, it is.
Yes, I think it was better than Force Awakens because Force Awakens felt a little phoned in to me. I mean, it was cool. Like, I hated the death of Han Solo, although, you know, whatever explanation you have, it needed to happen. Okay. I cannot take Adam Driver seriously as an evil person. Especially after they had him throwing temper tantrums. It just... I can't take Finn seriously either. He felt like he should not have been in a Star Wars movie. He kind of felt like he should have been in Spaceballs. I liked the idea of Rey, but I feel her portrayal was a little like, I'm too afraid of everything, you know, although she did whoop much butt at the end of the movie. But I don't know. I mean, I want the Star Wars movies to keep going, but I wasn't a huge fan of the new one. It was better than the prequels, I'll say that, but I think Rogue One was better than Seven. Rogue One felt like a Star Wars movie, even though I didn't like the ending. It still felt very much in the Star Wars world. Universe. Whatever.
Someone
else. Oh, throwing it. I'll go to Wes this time.
I still liked Force Awakens better, personally. I don't know. It definitely had a different feel to it, but I got a little more enjoyment out of that one. I guess probably because I hadn't seen one in so long before that. It was kind of like seeing an old friend for the first time. You know, even though they don't look the way you remember, it's really good seeing them again. But I do think that had this movie come out instead of the three prequels, can you imagine how awesome like that would have been?
Hmm.
You know, just the tone and the seriousness and the everything, you know, just then you wouldn't have that negative connotation for prequels. You know, they could have, if it was at this caliber, this level of quality, I think it would have been a lot better for the franchise. I'll pass it to Bob.
I don't know. It seems really odd to me to compare those two to say which one was better than the other because they're entirely different movies. For me, that's like saying, do you like Ghostbusters or like a horror movie? They're both scary. Like they both are about ghosts or whatever, but you can't compare like a horror movie and Ghostbusters. They're entirely different. And I liked The Force Awakens a lot because pretty much everything about it gave me that feeling that I remember from watching Jedi. Like, that's the only... I watched all of them in the theater, but I remember seeing Jedi in the theater, and it had gave me that same feeling of just like, oh, wow, this is... Oh, wow, you know. Whereas Rogue One, I really liked it, but it gave me a different feeling. It gave me a feeling of like, wow, this is really intense and dark, and I know that everybody's going to die, and it kind of sucks, but it's a good story, you know.
There's no, like, mystical wow factor.
Exactly,
know, like,
yeah. The magic of The Force Awakens, I think, was the thing that really got me excited again. Especially, I don't know what it is, something about that first scene with Poe and that whole... I don't know. There's just something about that scene that got me really like, oh, wow, Star Wars is back.
No,
this is awesome.
You know. I'll give you that one. That first scene was really...
When you stopped a laser
Yeah. Yeah, bravo, J.J. Abrams. That was very impressive. And that gave me chills, too.
And I'm not sure what it was exactly. Like, I'd never have been able to pinpoint it. But, yeah, I don't know. They seem really hard to compare to me. But what do you think, Sean?
It's going to be... My answer is probably really close to yours, Bob. and maybe it's because, like, we're the same age, so we probably had similar experiences seeing, you know, Star Wars when we were younger. But when I saw Force Awakens, I got chills in the theater. When I saw Rogue One, I got nothing. You know, even the scenes that revealed Darth Vader, it was cool. I liked seeing it, but he just didn't seem as imposing. I didn't feel that same sort of connection anymore. And Rogue One is a support story. It's not one of the, you know, the anchors of this, you know, of the Empire going forward or the New Order going forward at this point. It's nothing more than support. You know, it's kind of a story that's more myth than real storytelling as far as like the universe goes. Josh?
I liked The Force Awakens like you're talking about. Like, I watched those movies with my mom growing up, and that like mystical thing you're talking about, like it's building on what you had already remembered and what you already loved. And So I'm trying to do that with Deacon. So every Star Wars movie that we go to, I'm trying to kind of set that stage with him. The excitement that he had, like, during The Force Awakens was off the charts. It was amazing. Like, it was such a positive, like, oh, Dad, look at that. And, like, oh, that was great. And even I did it. And like I said, there was none of this in Rogue One. Other, like, he got excited when R2 and C-3PO showed up in, like, that half a second shot.
Yeah.
And so this was a documentary in my mind. Like, this was... it was shot like a documentary. Like, you learned about these characters, but it was about the entire... It was about the end. It was not about the journey. So I didn't need to learn the characters' names. I needed to know about them, have a little bit of emotion, but eventually they're going to die. It's about... There was a hole in the Death Star. This is how they got the Death Star plans to Digital Face Princess Leia, who shouldn't even have been there in the first place, which I still don't understand. But it, the journey, like, if you would have told me, like, this is how they got the plans for the Death Star, I'm like, oh, okay. And they're all dead. Like, let's talk about the Banthas, right? Or Bothans, the Bothans. That one line in Jedi... has taken place of this entire movie.
Yeah.
There were plans that the Empire had. The Bothans quotation for some people took it. They're all dead. And now we have them, and now we're going to go do good things for it. So I think this whole movie, while it's entertaining, didn't reveal anything and didn't really add other than where the exhaust port idea came from. Like, it filled that hole. And so, albeit it was an entertaining movie, it was really great. I liked it. There was really cool stuff in it. You could have told me that, oh, there's a guy who purposely put in that exhaust port because he was mad at the Empire and wanted to see it blown up and then gave the plans away. I'm like, oh, okay. I don't need to see the movie. Like, other than just being entertained, like, I don't need to see that now. Yeah. To where The Force Awakened, it was about the entire the storyline, everything built, and it's going to keep that train going. You didn't need to stop and look at, like, a placard, like, at this spot on this beach, these guys died doing a thing. And you're like, oh, okay, you keep walking.
The placard got blown up.
Yeah, the placard's not there anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, that fell on it.
That's interesting that you said that, because, like, the parts in Rogue One that I did get really excited about were, like you said with Deacon, they were the parts that called back to A New Hope. When I saw those those pilots, like, the leaders of those different color groups, I was like, oh, cool! Yep. That has nothing to do with Rogue One. It was just the fact that they were connected to something else that I like, you know? So, yeah.
Did you guys notice they kind of recycled a joke from Force Awakens where the a male character is surprised that a female character can hold her own in a battle? Mm-hmm. It was like set up the exact same way. Did you guys notice that?
It was.
Yep.
Yeah.
I saw that the second time around.
Strange.
Well, that was the other thing I was a little upset about. Like, you have this... I thought she was, and someone call me out if I'm wrong. I thought she was a very well designed female character. You know, she had there wasn't anything too overly cliche about her. She could kick a lot of butt, and I kind of think it was just a waste of a character. You know, like, okay, we're gonna put a lot of effort into this just to kill her. And that's it. She gets an hour and a half.
Well, she was actually signed on for two movies. And so I think the original intent was to have to do more with her, either as like a sub-character in something else, or go back and show some of her pre-Rogue One stuff.
Yeah.
Like Saw Gerrera stuff, maybe. I don't know.
You think she lived in the world?
Yeah, he was. That, he died because he was backing up to the explosion, so she's shielded from it. So she wakes up covered
They could possibly have some of those characters actually cross over with the Han Solo storyline.
Yeah,
they're going to.
I hope not. That would that
the Bodhi's going to show up whenever he's in like Imperial Pilot School.
I prefer Jerry they don't also. The
I could see them bringing Bodhi into like Rebels. And because I glanced over some articles where they're like, Blank is going to show up in Rebels, you know, and I'm like, I just don't want to know. I just want to watch the show and be surprised when it happens.
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't seen the movie, you've made it this far in the podcast. You have unfortunately been not surprised it's about ruined. What's going to happen in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Should we have told them this, there were spoilers in this?
Oops. Oh, yeah. We probably should have done that.
We didn't say the spoilers from here on out.
Okay. Well, from now on, there are going to be spoilers. So if you, yeah, sorry.
So that was good stuff. So, are we... We got to meet back every year now for our annual Star Wars spoiler cast.
At the very least, yeah.
That was fun.
You want to do a quick, what's everybody working on? Because we're already over an hour, right?
Let's do it.
Hour 16.
Do your 2-second spiel.
There's not a lot to edit out this time.
No, it was good.
Yeah.
All right, Wes, in 2 sentences or less, what are you working on?
I've been working on little spinners. They're quite fun.
I didn't have the audio on for the Instagram one. Did you have an air gun on that?
Nope. No air gun. That was all one flick. Oh. Yeah, it went for 30 seconds.
So you went to high quality.
And apparently it's not even the highest quality. You can get ones that have like ceramic internals, and they'll go for up to 2 minutes. But it's kind of like a little fidget toy instead of like clicking pens or doodling or something. Just keep your hands busy. So... kind of fun.
I can't remember the last time I was looking for a way to keep my hands busy. That boggles my mind that people have that kind of time.
Well, for example, yeah, like Catherine's workmate, he always clicks a pen in a meeting, like, annoyingly.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of a simple example, just something to fill that, you know, like squeeze balls at an office job, just kind of...
Or like in a podcast with people hitting desks.
Solves your coworkers trying to murder you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, and it's quite silent. But yeah, I've been working on that.
I have the one that Tony Rouleau made for me with the workshop logo. Every time I have to sit in some meeting I can't stand, I play with it. And it usually gets brought up, like, what is that thing? I'm like, don't worry about it. Keep talking for another hour. I'll be over here.
Just doing this for an hour.
What are you working on, Sean?
I'm working on trying to get through Christmas, trying to get through grading on my students' finals, and trying to find time to get back in the workshop. I have not been in the shop since before Boston.
B+, 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 B+.
That's all I'm doing.
Josh?
I have finished my master's degree.
Woo-hoo. Congrats.
Hey!
And now I don't know what to do with myself. So
it's beautiful, isn't it?
It's a little weird.
Get a drink and relax for a week.
Well, I sit in front of the computer the other day, not having to do any work, and so I just started getting
PhD.
On Fusion 360 PhD. And just making models of things. And so now I'm trying to determine what, like, in the workshop, like, what tool I want to get next. And it's like, well, do I want a lathe because I want to play with a lathe, or do I want a 3D printer because it's neat? And I think that's what I'm deciding on, because there's a bunch of stuff around the house that I want to fix, or that could be fixed by a very easy little piece that's customized, and so I've been modeling those things, and I think the day I sat there and I couldn't figure out what to do, I made a model and I sent it to Wes. I'm like, Wes, can you print this out to see if it works? And I was like, and I don't want to just bother people who have a printer. I was like, so I need to get one myself. But the Prusa Mark III is on 7-week back order, so I'll have to wait till maybe they catch up.
I just found a gypsum printer for $6,000.
Gypsum.
That sounds like a viable option.
Considering the things run $20,000, it's a bargain.
The Mark.
How about you, Mark? Yeah, what are you doing?
I finally have a good scan, which I'm super happy about.
A person scan?
Yeah, it was a cool shot.
Yeah. Outside of the blue, which, you know, that can be fixed with the lights, but I'm so happy I finally figured that out, because that was killing me.
I thought the scan you did of us at Making 100 looked pretty cool.
No, that did, but it was still like your hat was missing pieces and stuff, and Wes was, I think, missing part of his shoulder.
I never got scanned.
I was
missing everything.
You were missing every piece.
I scanned.
Yeah, that was Sean.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the files. So I scanned Sean and Josh. Okay. But yeah, I finally got a good scan the other night, and I need to get some photography lights to do it good normally. And change the temperature, and I should be able to get good scans just in and of themselves without any post-processing. That, and I finally physically have the X carved together.
Hey-o.
And now I just have...
Yay.
It only took 6 months. I just have to calibrate it and turn it on.
And curse. Well, no, be prepared to curse like a whole bunch of times. So just get that in your head.
You know what? I was so scared of the soldering part of it and turning it on and seeing the horrible blue smoke. And that didn't happen, so I'm just ecstatic. So, X-Carve and 3D scanning. And I kind of want to take those models and carve out someone's face in wood.
Reliefs, yeah.
Bob, what are you working on?
So,
that you can tell us.
So, the video that's going up tomorrow is actually, I built a trike. I don't know if you guys remember growing up, a thing called a green machine. You guys remember that at all?
I had a feeling you were working on that based on something I said earlier.
Like the big wheel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so it's like a big wheel, except instead of steering with the front wheel, you have two levers and you steer the back axle. So you turn the back axle.
Yeah.
And so I made one of those for adults. And it worked pretty well. I made it out of junk. So.
It's not drill power,
is
it?
It's pedal power. So it's Bob powered. But yeah, so that's a two-part video, and the first one's going up tomorrow.
So. As soon as you mentioned some...
Did I what?
Did you use your ramp?
Oh, no.
Oh, not yet.
No, not yet. Not at all. Yeah.
Part three.
Bob, as soon as you'd mentioned some of the parts that you were using, I was already able to picture the approach that you were taking. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it worked out pretty well. I mean...
Oh, was that the crutches, the exercise
in the
bike?
Bed frame, yeah.
Exercise bike.
It was...
Now we got to figure out what you.
It was unnecessarily hard. Well, basically, I took the bed frame, which is L brackets, and I welded them together to make square tubing,
okay.
Which is just a stupid amount of work for what it is. I mean, it's like not at all worthwhile. It's hard steel, but it still flexes because it's not, you know, it's just not perfect.
Yeah.
So
perfect.
That will get replaced one of these days. I'll probably end up doing a follow up after these two videos, like somewhere down the road. And fix a lot of the things that failed after I... Because I got it working for the video, and it does work, but there's a lot of stuff that I'm like, oh, that could be better, and this could be shorter, and that could be whatever. So that's what I've been doing.
Did you get the Ultimaker 3?
I did. It's right there.
Is it awesome?
It is awesome. It's a great printer. Like, I took it out of the box and hit print. Like, didn't do anything. No calibration, no setup, no anything. Perfect print.
I'm kind of happy that they're the one that survived over... What was the original three? It was Ultimaker, MakerBot, and... wasn't there a third one?
XYZ?
I don't remember.
No, DaVinci...
Stratasys?
I don't know.
Ultimakers are awesome. They're great printers.
Yeah. I just wish they had... Like nobody has really come out with the large format, one-click, dual.
That's what this...
Not yet.
The Ultimaker 3 is dual.
Yeah, that's what I thought that thing was supposed to do.
Well, the old Ultimaker 3 is dual, but it's not. It's not much bigger than normal, right? I mean, you can probably if you had to do your helmet. Did you do your helmet
on
that?
The two, and I did it in pieces. If you get the extended one, you get a lot more height. Well, you get like 3 more inches in height, but the bed itself is not any bigger. So it's not huge,
yeah.
No, but.
That's what she said.
But it was really cool. It was really cool because I set it up and then, like, there's an app. And so from my phone, this blows me away that this is even possible. From my phone, I open the app, I downloaded an STL file from my Dropbox, uploaded it into the slicing software in the cloud, it sliced it with all the settings that I wanted, and then took that file and sent it to the printer over Wi-Fi, and then hit... It started the print, and then I watched the print from the onboard camera on the printer, like on my phone.
Awesome.
That's crazy to me. So cool.
See that's what I want. I want I have a Wi-Fi camera
Raspberry Pi.
Set up by my printers, but I want that. That's really cool.
Awesome.
It can be yours for the low price.
Yeah, I have a lot of money.
Yeah.
I have to rebuild my Solidoodle 3 first.
Solidoodle.
For only $900, that's affordable.
Which is the worst name for a printer ever.
No, I think there've been some worse. I'd have to look, but I think there's been some worse ones. So it's dumb. It's not the worst. I just hated that color. Like, the, when I got the 3, I was like, all right, it's a decent printer, whatever. But every model after that, it's like, you guys are designing with the same problems your printers have always had. Why aren't you fixing this? And that's why they're out of business.
All right, so if you'd like to find out more about the podcast and the four of us, please visit makinggeeks.com. If you have any ideas for the show, questions, go to the contact page and drop us a line. We are always looking for ideas for the show. You can also listen to the podcast from the homepage of the website and check out all of our past shows and past special guests, such as Mr. Bob Claggett, like we have here returning today.
You can find us on our social media.
Yeah, we're only 27 episodes in.
Podcasting's tough.
The order is a new thing, though. It's only two episodes old. You can find us on our social medias at... I'm sorry, it's been
the Dusty Life. Or, nope, that's not right.
Yeah, it's makingitpodcast.com. That's
There it is.
Yes, you can find us at makingitpodcast.com and make... No. Making Geeks on Twitter, Making Geeks Podcast on Instagram, Making Geeks on Facebook. Find us at all three. Drop us lines, give us show suggestions. Let us know how you feel about us.
And if someone has
good or bad,
someone has a rational reason why Princess Leia was even in that battle to begin with, let us know on our social media sites because it's bugging me.
Hmm.
Well, she was on the ship, so they had a show.
Garbage.
It was so ILM could showcase their brand new almost people real CGI.
I have an idea. What if it's not actually Princess Leia? What if it's an android that looks like Princess Leia as a decoy on that ship? That's why it looks all creepy.
Did Star Wars steal LMD?
License model decoy.
I didn't say it was a good idea. So it was an idea.
All right, Wes.
And we also want to give a shout out and a thank you to our patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks. If you would like to see a video version of this podcast and get it a few days early before anyone else, you can do that. It's one of our pledge levels, so check it out. We appreciate it.
Find us all individually at geeksmithing.com, at geekbuilders.net, at Asylum Designs on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and at thepiworkshop.com, and at iliketomakestuff.com for Mr. Claggett there. And we'd like to thank everybody for hanging out with us on this spoiler cast of Rogue One. Always a good time when you hang out with us, Bob. Thanks for showing up.
Thanks for having me.
Hanging out.
I appreciate it.
Good seeing you, man.
If you ever need an outlet for your nerdy stuff,
man,
that Jimmy DiResta makes fun of you for, you know you've always got a seat here.
Sweet.
Well, hope everybody has a great week and a Merry Christmas. Oh, yeah. This should come out, what, the day before Christmas? The Christmas Eve?
Yep.
Gather around the fire.
Oh,
exactly.
Listen,
Christmas Eve.
Geeks. That should be a new tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cody.
I
second that.
Have a good night, everybody.
Take care. Happy holidays.
You guys have a good one.
Merry New Year.
Later.
Chocolate rain.
The soothing sounds of making geeks.